You are listening to Mining Stock Education, where you'll learn from the top leaders in the natural resource sector and uncover quality mining investment opportunities.
I took $50,000 and put it in and ended up making close to $1 million. So it was very interesting, right? Because I attributed it mainly to my skill. But what I realized is that I really knew nothing. And subsequently, I ended up, my next few investments ended up losing most of that.
Thanks for tuning in to MSE. I'm Bill Powers, your host. In today's show, you're going to hear from a listener of Mining Stock Education that I've gotten to know. He's an accredited investor with a successful, stable business, which allows him to deploy money into the more speculative resource stocks. He's also experienced a huge win, and you're going to learn in today's show what he did on the other side of that huge win. So, Chris Moore, thanks for coming on Mining Stock Education for the first time. Could you please introduce yourself to listeners, and how did you get interested in small cap resource stocks?
Hey, Bill. Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. So I am lucky enough to run a business in a very stable industry, as you were saying. And so I decided when I graduated from university that I could probably take a little bit more risk, but in doing so, I probably took way too much risk. And as you say, I started off my investment career with a substantial win. I took $50,000 and put it in and ended up making close to $1 million. So it was very interesting, right? Because I attributed it mainly to my skill. But what I realized is that I really knew nothing. And subsequently, I ended up, my next few investments ended up losing most of that. So that downhill slope, I actually learned way more than the benefit of gaining a lot of money.
Can you give us an idea of how you found this big, 20 bagger, $50,000 to $1 million? What was the process of that like?
I kind of fell into it. Recently out of university, still have connection with high school. I had a very intelligent, very smart fellow that I still keep in touch with now who worked for this small little technology company. So blindly, I put a lot of money into it. But hey, guess what was going on at the same time? The dot-com bubble, right? So yeah, this little company got swallowed by huge multinational, which then in turn got swallowed by even a bigger multinational. Unbelievable. But in the end, actually, interestingly, I didn't cash out at the top, and ended up giving back 30% of that. Everyone likes talking about their wins, but in the end, I didn't win as much as I thought I did because I didn't know when to sell. And but again, it was interesting for me because it created a certain amount of overconfidence in my case. I was willing to, kiss my biceps and say, "Woo, you're hot stuff." And in the end, I didn't know anything. I fell into a lucky situation. I did well, but as I say, subsequently, the next four investments really taught me some huge lessons.
So you got $1 million you sold. It's in your account now. And it sounds like you were itching to spend it after you made that huge win. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah. So luckily, my wife actually sort of said, we should take some off the table. I'm like, no, it's going to go to $2 million. Like, let's not sell. Anyways, as marriage is, it's a compromise. We sold enough to buy our first house. So kudos to her because, in the end, that's ultimately what saved us. But I was more keen to keep it in the market. And it's an interesting psychology. When you get into a winning situation, the tendency is to think, well, it's gone this far, it's going to go further. But as I look at it in retrospect, if I look at the chart, there were massive signs that it was peaking. And so in this win and in my subsequent losses, I've really had to go back and take a look at what mistakes did I make? And I made a lot of them. what mistakes did I make that I could have avoided? And from there, tried to move forward.
Chris, I spoke over the years with a very well-known resource fund manager, and he told me, Bill, when I feel too smart in my speculative resource investments, that's when I take money off the table and put it into real estate. And when I feel like the resource sector is horrible, that's when I take money from real estate and put it into the resource sector. So that went with me. So when I had my first multi-seven figure win, I took money from that. I bought a farm. I bought tractors. I invested in real estate. I put it in real assets so that even if I lose on all my other small cap speculations, I told my wife, at least I got some like things I can literally walk on or drive.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, I was young. I was right out of school. I had like a negative net worth. I mean, to have this win, man, I was walking on air. Like it was a phenomenal feeling. Likewise, it was an incredibly awful feeling to then go through the next 10 years and learn everything that I thought I knew. And, you know, to part of the investment process that I found is learning how to sell. You got to learn how to take your wins and move on. And yeah, that's a really tough lesson to have.
So do you have a guiding principle now after you have a big win? Is there like a percentage which you'll allow yourself, as agreed upon with your spouse, to redeploy into risky things, and then the rest have to go into dividend yielding stocks or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, after the fourth loss, and I had literally lost more than I had made in the first one, I had a choice. You know, I could either double down and take responsibility for the fact that I knew squat and continue to learn. And that was the biggest realization, because I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about technical analysis. I didn't know very much about fundamental analysis. I knew a little bit, and I had read a few books, but what I needed to determine was how I was going to solve the problem. Because here I was 15 years into my working career and I had gone backwards. So I just decided that I would do a hybrid of that between my business and then half of my investments. I put half my investments into somebody managing it myself or their self. And then I just decided that I would learn and just be a sponge. So my daily routine is I'm up at 4, I work out for an hour, I do 2 hours of stock research, and I go to work for 8 hours, and I come home and spend the rest of the evening with my wife. So yeah, it takes a lot of dedication. And part of it is just accepting the fact I screwed up. You know, you gotta take responsibility for the fact that, you know, somebody can make a recommendation, but you don't know what's behind door two. And that is the problem, because being young, being full of overconfidence, I heard someone say this, so I said, well, this is going to do this. And I, you know, there were a lot of I knows instead of saying, what's behind door number two for these people? You know, they sang a song, I drank Kool-Aid, and I lost a lot of money because of it.
Chris, do you think that if you didn't lose money on the other side of that $1 million gain, that what would have happened if you didn't lose?
That's a good question, right? I think, depending on, you know, if you make a gazillion dollars and you can retire and then put it all into, you know, GICs, then it's all good, right? But, you know, if you're going to continue playing the game, what I've determined is that you just have to take your winnings and then put it into something safe. And then, you know, constantly think about it as net worth. You know, that's something that I really had trouble figuring out, is that you got to think about net worth. Because, you know, you may make $1 million in your first investment, maybe your net worth goes up to $1 million, but what if it falls back? Like, even if I had taken half of that, which I took some of it to buy this house, but even if I had taken half of that and put it into something stable, it would have, you know, that itself was 20 odd years or 25 years ago, right? Even at 4%, that's a huge nest egg for most people, including me. So, you know, if I hadn't done that, knowing me, I'd probably have found some investment that I would have learned a lesson. Yeah, investing is interesting, right? Because it makes you learn more than anything about yourself. Like, you know, are you overconfident? Are you an overoptimist? Do you take everybody at what they say? Are you interested in doing the amount of work that's required to get there? Are you trying to, this is interesting that I found myself doing, are you trying to approve your thesis? Or are you trying to disprove your thesis? I spend all my time now trying to disprove my thesis. I'm looking at everything that will say, this is a crop, you got to get it.
So are you, err on the side of optimism, the blue sky versus the risks?
Yeah. That's an interesting question.
And if so, who's to balance you? Is it your wife or is it somebody else that knocks some sense into you?
Yeah, there's always got to be a balancing factor. And definitely my partnership is with my wife is a balancing thing. But I would say that it's interesting how emotion plays into the whole investment thesis. I've been at the top and I've been at the bottom. So, you know, every time I think I'm happy, you know, if I'm happy with my portfolio, I look at how I felt. And I actually wrote myself notes. Like, it's funny, back in 2008, I wrote myself a note that actually kind of brought tears to my eyes because I was down. Like, the gut-wrenching feeling of losing money, oh, it's awful. It's, you know, they always say it's four times worse than winning. It was at least 10 times. Like, it was awful. I had a young family, business to run, employees, you know, as behind the eight ball. So, you know, for your listeners, I would say you got to be careful because in the end, you're sticking your neck out over that post and you got to be careful. There are a lot of people singing various songs in the process.
Chris, you're an accredited investor, but you also buy in the open market. Can you kind of talk through the decision-making you go through to whether you want to invest in a private placement or just buy the stock on the open market?
Yeah, I'm not liquid enough personally to do convertible debentures or anything like that. So generally, my process is in the process of taking a look at the lessons I needed to learn to move forward. The first thing I decide is that as I look back at my losses, there were clear chart indications that it was topping. And, you know, there was one company in particular I'll share, and it was a small high-tech company in finance. And it's funny, I remember like it was yesterday, you know, the stock craters 23% on one day, high volume. So I call up the CEO and, you know, I was kind of at that point where I was networking, trying to, you know, reach out to CEOs, CFOs, get an idea of what was going on. I called up the CEO. I said, what's going on? He says, everything's good here. Everything's good. You know, somebody's quants just picked up or kicked in. I'm like, quant? What's a quant? I didn't know what I didn't know. And you know, bottom line is that was a foretelling of the fact that they lost a contract that was worth half of the revenue. So when I look back at that, it's like, wow, you knew nothing, like as in me. So with that, the first thing I did is I taught myself how to read a chart. You know, and from there I screen, you know, these days in the investment world, I mean, a lot of it's momentum. So good things beget good things, bad things beget bad things. And then from there, I started realizing that the arbitrage between smaller companies versus what it's worth versus what it's trading at is huge. So I started venturing into almost bankrupt companies that had great management that I felt confident, but that were in a sector that had huge tailwinds. So with that, you know, I've kind of turned the ship around.
So you found your niche where you feel like you have an advantage.
I do. And it's hard, right? As a, I'm just a little guy, right? I mean, I compared to the multi-billions and the trillions of dollars flowing around the financial industry. I mean, I'm small, right? And insignificant. And once you realize that what happens to you really doesn't make any difference. Sun still comes up, sun still goes down, you know, but in the end, your life can be materially affected by poor decision-making and poor allocation, poor selling, poor buying. I mean, the components of being able to do this successfully are huge. And that's why most people don't do it, right? Most people just say, okay, I'm gonna put my X number of dollars out to my financial advisor and let them put it in a mutual fund. They could charge me either 3% because they're worth it. I just can't buy that myself. So I decided to go on the route of, yeah, let's learn as much as we can.
Chris, with your funnel that brings you ideas for potential investments, whether it be a show like mine or something else, or Twitter or something you see, can you talk about what you do with that information? So, for example, as someone who runs a sponsor-based podcast, literally for the same sponsor, I have emails, people thanking me saying, because you featured this sponsor, I'm paying for my kids' education. And at this with the same company, if it doesn't work out years later, I listened to you and I lost my life savings. Thank you very much. How would you take like sponsored information from this show? What do you do with it?
Well, first of all, I would say that anybody putting any skin in the game needs to take responsibility for anything that they do. I mean, that's ultimately what I told myself. It's like, look, man, you mixed up your thing. You thought you knew more, you didn't know anything. You need to take responsibility. And the internet is littered with this recommendation, that recommendation. The question is it management that's trying to, promote themselves so they get an easy out? I mean, there are so many curtains that there could be another motive in behind. But in answer to your question, I will take ideas on the internet as merely ideas. And then I'll say, first of all, is it a sector that has headwinds? I mean, or headwinds or tailwinds, and you sort of say, okay, well, that's a possibility. And then you sort of say, okay, well, is it in the market cap that I want it to be in? Because the smaller you go on market cap, the more liquid, illiquid it is, right? So it becomes like Hotel California. It's easy to get in, but you can't leave, right? So you have to be really, really careful that you don't down cap enough that you actually say, this sector has a lot of tailwinds. I feel good about this. Let's go into this because you may not be able to get out. So, again, it just comes down to the challenge of investing there. It's like a game of golf. You can drive, but can you putt? Can you chip? I mean, there's so many things that you have to look at. But further in answer to your question, I run myself now through a series of litmus tests. Including, is it a sector that I want to be in? Is the chart looking somewhat okay? What is the macro? Because you really have to look at, what's the economy doing? I mean, we get so many mixed messages now on the economy. Like, what you sometimes you hear from one person, that's one thing, another person, that's another. So you got to kind of figure out what you believe is the macro, what I believe. I can only speak for myself. But from there, ultimately, it just comes down to filtering, going through the financials. Is it an almost bankrupt company? Can they turn around? Does management have it? Have I talked to management? What's my gut feeling from them? And from there, you just kind of piecemeal your positions. Like they say they're going to do this. Well, if they don't do that, then a little warning sign goes up. But you don't just go whole hog and put a whole bunch of money, which is exactly what I used to do. It's like, hey, it's a great idea. Let's go throw a whack of cash in there because I was right before. I'm going to be right again. So again, this is the hubris that I feel, kind of snookered me.
Chris, I had a really nice email I got from a listener in Australia. Works a job, saved up six figures, deployed it into gold and silver stocks. He's very bullish gold and silver stocks. And he reached out and said, but I'm not confident enough in my own decision-making ability with these small caps and was asking my advice, should I hire a professional advisor? Now, you mentioned giving money to, a mutual fund manager and he takes his 3% fee or whatever. But what are your thoughts as someone who's kind of grown and learned? You've had the pains of loss, you've had the ecstasy of the wins. What do you think if someone's going to mess with these little small cap junior resource stocks, high risk, high reward, and if they're not confident, should they hire an advisor? Should they stay away? Should they just buy an ETF? Any thoughts to share here?
Well, I guess I would say caution, caution, caution. I mean, how will you feel if that $100,000 is gone? Is it going to ruin your marriage? Is it going to make it so that you're going to lose your job? I mean, You know, if you've lost, you know, your life savings, I'll tell you, it really affects your psyche. Like, it's downright depressing. So, you know, caution. And the question really is how much do you really know? I thought I knew a lot, and I didn't. I really didn't. And you know, years after the fact, as I learn more and I become a sponge, and I have been a sponge, but there's still stuff that I learn on a daily basis. You know, I was watching a podcast with Louis Vuitton Gavet today, and I was like, oh my God, like these guys are, you know, they think outside the bubble so far beyond where I am. And I'm trying to absorb this stuff. So in answer to your listener, you know, be careful. I mean, there are sharks in the water, and you got to know, you know, you take a little bit of risk, but until you have experienced the loss of that, maybe, you know, 1% of your pot of your portfolio, I don't know. I've done the opposite. I didn't feel good about it.
Well, Chris, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for coming on the show. This appearance doesn't necessarily do anything for you. You didn't need to appear. You're not promoting a newsletter or anything like that. So I just wanted to say thank you for sharing in humility your experience with listeners. Chris Moore, everybody, take what he said. Don't let that hubris that I made all this money because I'm so smart. As you have some of these big wins. Maybe you had a big win in lithium or uranium over the last year or two, or maybe you're going to have one in gold and silver if it keeps running over the next year or two. Don't let it go to your head. You're not as smart as you think you are, and you got to protect the cash that you made. Chris, any final thoughts?
No, Bill, just thanks for doing what you do. I mean, you provide a service to small investors, and I listen to you all the time. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for listening to Mining Stock Education. Please subscribe and share this show with like-minded investors. Connect with us at miningstockeducation.com and sign up for our email list to stay in touch. Much success to you as you learn about, invest in, and profit from mining stocks.
The mining business is one that generates gigantic wealth. You know, a good drill hole that converts might cost $50,000 or $100,000, and it might discover something worth a couple billion.
There is no sector that I know of that has offered up as many predictable circumstances where there was the possibility, certainly not the certainty, but the possibility of 10-for-1 returns as there is in small cap and micro cap mining stocks. Concomitant with that, if you don't do the work, or even if you do the work and don't discipline yourself on the sell side, there are very few places in the world where you can lose as much money as quickly as in mining stocks too.
I just started to study up on mining stocks, and I just became fascinated because this is such a tiny sector and it's so volatile that either you could do really, really well, or you could pretty much get blown out of the water really quickly.
The mining sector is a very risky sector. It can take your money very, very quickly. Don't fall in love with stocks. Don't be overly confident. And just do your work as best you can. Do your very best. But don't fall in love and don't get too overly confident, because that's a recipe for disaster.
I have met, you know, professional retail investors that have made a tremendous amount of money on the junior mining space. Some of them aren't accredited, and they spend their days researching, talking to people, being on the phone, pouring through financial documents. But it requires commitment.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature, and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.